everybody, indeed. Welcome to Metanorn's Mini Talk on Aldenoa Zero for episode 3, The Children's Echelon. I'm Jero, joined by Froshizzle.
Hey, what's up?
Smiley.
Hello.
And Skyline.
I am secretly a lowly.
So it is time to take down this pill bug of a mech, as they call it, in this third episode. First off, we have some new characters. We meet a couple new characters this week, including Darzana Magberej, who is a captain of the Wadatsumi assault ship, and Kaoru Mizuzaki, her XO, her executive officer. And they interact a little bit with the Lieutenant Marito, who has, you know, walked away from his damaged mech and is wondering, where are the kids at? Where's everybody else at? Not really much to go on with these characters, except for when Magberej says that she'll join their search for them and that she's taken an interest in Marito.
Oh yeah, that line. I was like, oh yes, ship.
Or if that's setting up for some traitor action, you know, that could go.
or is that a death flag? No.
Yeah.
You can't kill that guy. He's invincible.
With a girl anyway, I think she would, since she's kind of a random nobody in my opinion right now. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. She could probably end up being a fodder character who dies. Like, oh no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think we hear Kaoru speak at all. She just kind of stands there. She just can do some work. Alright, so let's talk about the armor that Nilo Caris has, and Inaho and the kids all kind of assess it and try and figure out exactly what's going on with it. They figure out that anything that, you know, sensor pings or whatever, you know, those can be detected, and the barrier can absorb light and radio waves and all this stuff. But the thing is, with that barrier up, you shouldn't be able to see outside. So that's where they figure out that there's probably some kind of satellite cameras that Trill Ram is using in order to be able to see and be able to hit the mechs and such.
Right. I'm going to go off for a bit about this because there are a few things to be said about how his force shield thingamabobber was described. Now, to start off, the subs I use at least mention that the shields can absorb quote-unquote, kinetic energy and electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah, that's what I had to.
There's some very specific things that they mentioned there. And first of all, if the shield absorbs kinetic energy, that does not in any way make matter, go poof. It doesn't do that. It might stop a bullet or a shell in its tracks.
It will not take away its momentum.
Yeah, well, it won't take away the form or the mass of the bullet. Now, it could do that maybe if it, you know, had some crazy effect on the governing forces, but let's not go there because that's a little too detailed. But my problem here is that they said that the shield absorbs all forms of electromagnetic radiation, so you can't, infrared sensors don't work, you know. Radio waves, radar, don't work. Sonar is actually something else entirely, but we'll just chalk that up to absorbing matter or something like that. or energy, that could work too. It's a transverse wave. But so if electromagnetic waves can't pass through, first of all, how are we seeing him? Because light is an electromagnetic wave. And second of all, which is the bigger problem, is that there's a major inconsistency here in that if nothing can pass through the shield, how is he talking to those satellites he has? Because the only way of remotely talking to anything is more or less through some form of electromagnetic radiation, whether it be radio waves or what have you. It's a big inconsistency there, but... It's not too bad because I think the show accomplished what it needed to do there, which was to provide some sciencey sounding explanation that would pass by most people. because I don't think the average person is going to really pick up on some of the questionable things that happened there. The little buzzwords being thrown around, they don't really understand what's happening. So I think it was okay for the most part, although I was a little wary on how they tried to explain it away, because they tried to go very scientific there. And if you're trying to explain things in a sciencey way, you then kind of limit yourself, because then your audience doesn't expect you to be able to get away with, he talked to his satellites through alien technology, because that's what alien tech does.
Right.
For the most part, anime, when they do that, they set themselves up to be critiqued, which is basically what you just did there.
Right. Especially in the mecha genre, they always do that.
Or any kind of science fiction genre, when you get right down to it. You know, back in the 80s, you know, Time Magazine had a spread when Star Trek Next Generation came out. And because they had gone on a media blitz and they had, like, blueprints available for the transporters. Mm-hmm. And one journalist was looking through it, and there was this thing called, you know, the Heisenberg uncertainty buffer.
Ah, yes.
Something like that.
Compensator.
And the journalist asked Brennan Braga, who was one of their science advisors, and he was a science advisor on and producer on the Cosmos that just came out.
Right.
And he asked him, how does this thing work? And he says, it works very nicely, thank you.
Didn't he say it works just fine or something like that?
No, it works just fine. It works nicely. You know, yeah, same difference right down to it. But, you know, that's science fiction. It has to be internally consistent in how they explain things. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, I was much more concerned about the fact that how did they test the fact that all forms of electromagnetism cannot pass through it? Did they just make a guess on that?
It sounded like they generalized, which is never a good idea, but they got away with it. So there it goes. Well,
I'm looking at the video. It looks like they had about maybe 3 minutes to be able to explain it. Generalization city it is.
And then they just tested with a drone. Yeah, to test the sensor thing.
Just how running it can be detected. It's like, oh, you kids.
I wonder how in the Sky Carrier, how it was able to carry it then.
So the shield wasn't active at that time. Yeah. Thing.
But, yeah. But they shot at it.
Right. If you pay attention, I believe at some point the shield activates while they're being attacked, and I believe you also see it cover the carrier as well. I think we might have to go back and review the footage, but I believe that's what happened.
Yeah, it does hit there are shots that hit the carrier, but the carrier is shielded at that time.
Yes, and here we see that the carrier, and it's even explained to us explicitly that the carrier itself inherently does not have any special abilities, so there must be some way that Tro-Ram can allow his shield to be extended to, you know, other things. Maybe it's just if it's physically connected to him.
Yeah, I think it's physically connected. Yeah, I think so.
And we see that happen in battle, but before that, let's talk about the bit of conversation that Inaho and Inko had as Calm was pretending to sleep. Kind of interesting to get a little bit more inside Inaho's head now. For the longest while, we thought, you know, here's this very quiet guy that's not saying much. But, you know, now that he gets to talk a little more here with Inko, you get a little bit more inside to his character. And I really appreciated that scene.
Don't catch a cold.
Yeah. shipping? Any shipping going on there?
Possibly. Again, me, it's like, for Steak. Most mecha, it's like, can't really attach to certain females in the shows. They're easily the first one to get axed.
Death flag. Inko's gonna die.
Yeah.
Yep. Alright, so the plan to take down Tro-Ram is to set up some smoke screens, shoot some smoke screens so that he can't be able to view them with his cameras. And then we have Rayet and the princess riding in a truck, and there's a cute scene in there where the princess shoots a smoke screen and she holds the gun to her side and smiles. It's like, look at me, yay!
I'm helping.
I'm so kawaii.
Helping.
And then Inaho just staring straight, just like, not impressed.
He's like, yeah, I'm not impressed at all.
I've seen better.
I was like, she's pretty, confident with the grenade launcher. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then to buy some extra time while everybody else is getting set up, that's when the princess reveals herself to Tro-Ram as changes from her previous look to that of her original self as the princess, and then Troy Ram's face when.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. I was like, also thinking like, oh my god, a princess, she's a magical girl.
Mm-hmm.
Could change form and change her appearance. Yeah. And
I mean, that was a really nice transformation scene.
Yeah, and that guy's just freaking the hell out. Just backing away like, oh my god, you. And like, can't you smash her? It's right there, smash her.
I think his reaction was actually like absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculously over the top if you think about
it. Yeah,
it was. Like, oh my gosh, I'm just like backing off and screaming and my face is getting all livid and stuff. But like, if you consider his position, which is basically, oh, now I'm going to be exposed as a traitor and I'm screwed now. And also he talks about his clan, but maybe we'll get into that later on. But yeah, so that's a pretty a big deal, serious moment for him. So I think even though it was sort of cheesy with how like his reaction is just so over the top, I thought it was perfect for that moment, and also for his character too, because he's got this major god complex going on where he's like, I'm chasing down rats and you know they're nothing, and then suddenly everything comes crashing down when he sees her.
And it also tells you they didn't really let him in on the major plan either. They kind of left him in the dark, so he didn't know that we tried to assassinate her, you know, like,
It's always that way. There's always these people know this much, and then this guy knows that much, and then you know, and then we get to the teamwork element with the kids. Inko shooting down the bridge with some snipes, and then Calm using a drone to find the gap in the armor as it's just sort of sitting there in the water, and then that's when Inaho comes in and knifes it. And then shoots a mecha. This is for my friend.
That's pretty awesome. That's the first time I've seen like a mech get shanked.
Yeah.
Oh, bam, the hole. Like, yes. I like that.
It's because
when his comment,
up close and personal, it's always a bit of a treat, isn't it? Because they're always beam spamming each other and missile spamming each other.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And the comment said, this is for my friend and all that. I'm like, yeah, well, at least he did something. Good job. I did like the weapons they had. Each robot had a different weapon. I like that.
Yeah. And then that's when Slain goes, oh my god, the princess is alive.
My waifu.
And then, and then you stay after the credits, pulls Trill Ram up from the water, finds out that he was one of the guys that's involved in the assassination attempt, grabs his gun, bang, bang. Trill Ram's like, looking at himself, his bloody hand, and
he went crazy.
It
was what, like 6 bullets, something like that? 6 or 5? I was like, damn, Slain.
4 or 5, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the moment you pull the gun out, I'm like, you gotta do it. I mean, you already gone this far. It's already no chance, no way to back out of that. So when he shot him, I was cheering the whole entire time, like, yes, shoot him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so now, what next? Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, that was a pretty big moment, I felt, for his character. Well, obviously, but, like, I was not expecting him to, man up soon and just take action, you know, think for himself for once. And this can have some pretty big impact, because, first of all, he's just killed his supervising officer or superior.
Yeah.
And that guy is sort of a big deal, I guess. He's not that big of a deal, but he's like, I thought he's
one of the knights.
Yeah, he's pretty important, even though he's not directly in control of a castle.
Yeah.
So, I kind of wonder where Slain's gonna go from here. If he'll try to bring news of the princess's survival back to the Martians, or maybe if he'll defect, or maybe even if he talks to the Martians about it, he'll still be branded as a traitor for killing Troll Ram or something.
Yeah, I'm thinking that he won't immediately fall on the side of the Earthlings unless he immediately ran over to the princess and she kind of explained some things. And then, but I don't think he'll very quickly just join them.
Yeah, for me, I'm seeing more like a Valbrave situation where in that we had LF, he kind of joins the humans for a little bit, but he's not really an ally.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing his own thing behind the scenes, so I can see him doing that. Plus, the other question is, how does he get back to his Martians' friends? Because, like, he has no ship, no way to get back. So how is he going to get back?
Yeah.
He's kind of stranded right now.
Someone's watching him. I've always
I wouldn't
been
be surprised
that...
if someone already saw him and killed Phil. You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
The Martians are divided about what to do on this. Several of them, you know, again, did not commit to the big old planet drop, so someone's watching somebody.
Right. Well, I thought that the ones that weren't left over, especially that guy that Trodan was talking to, it sounded like some of them were playing kind of a long-range support, because that guy at the beginning was talking about using some sort of, I don't know, barrage from space. So it's possible not all of them that didn't come down are against the invasion. Maybe there is some sort of tactics going on where they have people.
They mentioned in the last episode that they were firing from space, some of those, so there was a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I still think there's something to that thought that I think I had mentioned back in episode one, that they're not all on the same page.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that when if Sling gets the message out, the princess is still alive. Those other ones that are with the princess will probably turn on the other ones. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Earthlings will get more allies here soon.
Yeah.
And the other question is, you know, episode 3 is just the last one that Obuchi wrote, so it's like, where do we go from here? How's the story going to change?
Boku no Pico.
Yeah, I'm guessing it. Yeah.
So basically, it's, it's slain ex Inaho.
Probably.
Yeah, this episode 4 could be the first episode of, excuse the pun of the character name, but it could be the first calming episode of the series because from the very start, it's been an adrenaline rush, like, oh, there's a terrorist attack, and Trollram is just killing everything, and then now
they're going to do a training montage, the robots, like running on the beach with the robots at the same time. It'd be a beach episode. You know, they got to do that. You know.
They got to go back to school.
A festival episode. You got to do that. A club, you know. cultural festival. There you go.
No, parting the rubble over there. There was just a war earlier.
Going to build a maid cafe robot, you know, thing.
So. And then the surprise twist is that suddenly space vampires appear.
Yeah. I mean, all our shows do space vampires.
Someone's got to see into the future. There's got to be chickens.
I wonder what the amount of magic is in this series, having seen the transformation scene of the princess.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was necessarily magic. That was just really flashy tech.
Could be.
Call it something just, like what they had in Cycle Pass, maybe.
Hologram?
Maybe it was like holographic transformation clothes thing. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, just cutting edge technology. Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Wonder how much.
If she's really naked, it's just a hologram that's covering her.
Yeah, I mean that would be absolutely perfect. Just set the show up with some fan service right there. You know, it
falls in the water. Whoops, my technology went wrong. Oh no.
Short circuits.
Overload.
Did you just say your hollow bra came off?
Your hollow bra. Yeah, there you go. Hollow pantsuit. Oh no.
And then just one other fun note was Inaho on the toilet. I saw that and I thought about what I do at my job at work. Just bring the phone in there, just sit and read.
just plotting some, you know, some strategies against giant robots in the toilet. And the sister barges in too.
Yeah, it's like, I know you're there.
It's like, go away.
Sisters do.
Mm-hmm. All right, so episode 3. Very entertaining episode, very fun. Great music, of course. And it was great to see the teamwork in taking down Trollram and the Nilocaris.
Yep, pretty much.
Any other thoughts, guys?
Looking forward to more Princess Sama doing her thing. I like her. I want to see her with more guns. Yeah.
Yeah, she holds a gun in the opening.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, I thought this was a very strong, another, you know, I say this every time so far, but yet another strong episode for the show. It's setting things up. It's going places, and we can only wait until next time to see what they're gonna do. Not that they have, you know, the princess on their hands. Might be interesting.
And slaying the badass killer. Yes, I like that.
Yeah, that needs to
go ahead.
That needs to be resolved. See how Slain, Rayette, and Asylum fit into the Earthling mix.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, we know Rayette is kind of. She seems like she's on a path of revenge now, having watched her father die, so she may be more closer to fully joining the Earth Force.
Yeah, easily swaying to, hey, join us. You can get revenge. Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Yeah, but notice during those scenes that she shared with Asylum, she wasn't necessarily happy-go-lucky to have her. Mm-hmm.
Well, she was. There was a couple time or two she was looking at her phone, a picture of her dad.
Yeah.
Still dejected over his death. With those very short shorts cut so short you can see the pockets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but, well, it does make me wonder with her. It does make how much she bought into being part of that clan or being part of that detachment to kill Asylum. I wonder how much she's still wedded to that.
Yeah, it's possible. Maybe she's just riding a wave of emotion right now, and maybe as she progresses through the series, maybe she could revert back if that's even the thing.
Right.
I don't know. I see that. I think that there's literally no place whatsoever left for her in the Mars Empire because, she if word gets out that she tried to, that she's part of the clan that tried to kill the princess, you know, she's screwed. B, even if that clan is welcomed back as heroes somehow, she still just failed her mission because the princess is alive.
She's alive. Yeah.
So there's literally nothing left for her back on Mars. Besides being branded a traitor and probably being killed, so yeah.
And also, it just doesn't seem like she has any important position. It almost seems like they just found some guys to do this for them, and then now she's all by herself.
Especially Trollram. I mean, at the beginning, when Trollram was talking about chasing the rat, it was kind of vague as he was talking about. But I think we figured out that he is talking about her and not not like an Inahu's sister or even the princess. He didn't know who the princess was alive yet then. Yeah. But like he said, like the last rat.
Yeah.
And he must have been referring to her.
Yeah, because when he killed the others, he did start chasing her. But that was probably just like not like she was an important person, but that she was the last person that knew that he had killed them. Last link to the assassination attempt, which of course has failed. All right, so that has been our mini talk for episode 3. Thank you for listening. For Fosh, for Smiley in Skyline, I'm Jero, and we will see you next week. Die, me and I.